Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SAOBI Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder on how to join us, we have talk guests every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 724-444-7444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the talk show website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for call ID 17702. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you need to reach me via Skype, my Skype ID is FranzGames, FranzGemes. Of course, you can follow me on the Twitters. My account there is Paul Franz. So to find me on Twitter, just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. That's PaulFranz. And of course, I have a secondary account called FranzGames, where I announce this podcast, announce news, and also client updates. And of course, this lovely talkcast gets turned to podcasts available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB. Steve Cole was busy working on his new computer that he picked up last week, which was much faster. After Lena went, you know, we can actually connect this hard drive to the network and you can just copy right there. Boom! And copy right across. And the new computer has now a double redundancy automatic backup system, which is always a good thing when computers die, because invariably they do. Wow, what a shock. Steve worked on Shapeways, also read the recent copies of the FYEO, and hunted down missing parts of Jag Panther number 3. So I'm assuming they're going to get that up on the various e-tailers for the e-books. Also did his parts of Hailing Frequencies. Remember, see the marking list from Gene. Wow. And Steve Petrick was busy working on, of course, Zinni and Gordon Master Starship book this week. And Gene was uploading Shapeways. Yes, always a good thing. Just find more ships. And, of course, she'd been dealing with spam assault on the BBS. But also, she was proofreading communicate number 146 and, of course, took care of various customers, which is always a good thing. You have to have customer support because otherwise they leave. Even though I can't say much about that because I'm not exactly the greatest when it comes to customer support. I thank you for all who indulge me in everything that I do. Now, when it comes to SAB Online tournaments, we still have Rad 47 tournament, though, which is not completed, people. Get it done. When it comes to Platinum Head 2017 tournament, that actually is going on quite well. Got quite a few more games done. And I was contacted this week by my opponent, Paul Graves. I'm going to die. Well, hopefully not. Even if I do die, hopefully I can give him a very good challenge. Gorn versus Seltorian should be interesting. Moving onward to the library report. Actually, no progress there. I haven't got any new submittals to me. And I apologize, I should have already done this, which is I have to do some trimming of the old library because we do have some ships that need to be deleted because of they're non-official and therefore they should never have been in the library to begin with. I know this is probably part of Aaron Staley's, his grand vision of everything SFP in there, including playtest stuff, which is like from the captain's logs and things like that, which really shouldn't be in there. To begin with, it should be only official stuff. For the most part, there are some playtest stuff in there, and I'm not going to get rid of some of that stuff, but that's the way it is. That leaves us at 71.2% completed. We need to get some more work done. I want to get this up to 99, at least 90% by the end of the year. I want to get 100%, but I'm not sure how much is going to be delayed by Steve Cole. So with that is the news for this week. And it's me, yes, the one, the only, the Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight it is me and the chat room. We got the wonderful chat room. We got Russ. We got Dave. Guess three, Dave. Don't ask. long history. That's, if you're on the podcast, you know the history. Boy, we're already up to episode 465. I've done more on 465 episodes, which is incredible. If you just think about it there for a moment. I've probably done more like 470, maybe a little more than that, because I know there's certain which I did not count the numbers of, which were the recordings that I released for things like Origins, which was awesome. Those recordings were awesome. I was so glad I was able to make it there. And one time I couldn't make it to Origins. I think I got Roger to record things, which was awesome. But I released those things many, many years ago now. Jeez. That's one I do not know. I don't know if I can grab those all from TalkShoe. I think I can. And actually, I got to figure out where did I put those archives. Because I don't delete my recordings. I keep them. I just don't know where I put them. But just like deleting them, I guess. I'll find them. In the future, because I know I've not deleted. I know the hard drive. I'm pretty sure the hard drive that they're on is still good. So no problem. Okay. Well, today one thing I want to start off with actually is a game which I can't wait for the latest updates, which is Prime Directive, which is I think is going to be kind of is cool. It's a neat game. Of course, to me, I'm going to be honest here. I haven't played role-playing games, the actual role-playing games, since my 20s. I was 20s. It was a few years after I graduated from college. And I'm still dating my wife, who's the person is now my wife. We got to play a lot of wonderful, role-playing games. And then one time I decided to quit because of religious reasons, basically. I went all fanatic on people, that this anti-Christian and all that kind of thing. I'm not as strong-willed and strong-headed about that anymore. But, and after I quit, I broke up the band at that point. It's like, I can't believe I broke up. It's one of those weird things with the groups that I either, gaming groups that I play in. Invariably, if I'm not there, they don't have it. I've yet to figure that one out. Because I know the one, which was actually an SFB group that I would basically gather people together. And I know it was always me. I was always the person making arrangements. I was always calling people and scheduling. And I did this for multiple years. I finally I gave up because I was so frustrated. It's like, I'm just tired of being the organizer, But anyhow, the other one, which was disappeared because I stopped playing. Not sure why they did. Why they stopped playing? Because it was the campaign was pretty cool. My friends in college, and actually we lived together for a while. I've lived in his house, and we actually shared an apartment for a while. Dan, and he was a great GM. Though I've got to feel sorry. I feel sorry for all GMs because. You have a very thankless job is what you've got. I understand that a lot of GMs, they enjoy what they do, but I honestly know it's can be the most frustrating things ever created. Why? If you're a GM, you already know this. If you're not a GM and you have not heard me talk about it before, listen up. That is that. Most campaigns, any decent campaigns where you actually have choices and which then therefore makes helps you to engage in the campaign, not just okay, what's next, what's next, what's next. You know, basically a story on rails. You know, where you just hack and slash. I call a hack and slash campaign. Go from I have to go through this dungeon and get this treasure, or you know, rescue the maiden, or whatever you want to call it. You know, a dungeon crawler, and that would be a dungeon crawler in that case. But you know, the big thing is that those are you know, their own rails. You don't have choices. You're there to hack and slash. You're there to kill the monsters, grab the booty, and that's it. And it's like, okay, that's, in my mind, that's an okay campaign. If you want a game referred to as you know, a beer and pretzels kind of game, which is a simple game and just played without thinking for the most part, at least it's simple. Okay. I apologize. A lot of beer and pretzel games are thinking games. They're not that deep. They're a lot of fun to play. People enjoy them, and people make a lot of money selling those kind of games. So I don't want to apologize if I, you know, upset anyone about that comment, but I, you know, most people like to have a thinking game, a thinking campaign, one where you can decide, okay, no, you know what? We're not going to go after the monster in that dungeon that's been causing havoc. You know why? Because we're going to get our butts kicked. That's why. Oh, that just reminds me of, okay, I'll get to my rabbit in just a moment. But, you know, I want to be able to, you know, go meet the king, because the king said, "Oh, you know, my princess disappeared. Last time we saw her, she was going into town." And so, in which case, you do a little mystery. You know, okay, you go to the different bars, and then you talk to the bartender or talk to other people. Maybe give them a little remuneration. You know, give them a little money there. You know, obviously, you get a little money from the king. You know, we're getting some walking around money to find information, you know, grease some palms and so forth. You know, my subjects will never. Right. Whatever. Just give me the money, because they invariably it helps loosen tongues. You know. But anyway, that whole thing. But you know, it's more a mystery and adventure kind of thing, and that's the kind of adventures people like, in my mind. Those are the adventures that take GMs so much time to create. And what happens? You go on the search for this princess. You might say, "Oh, let's go. Let's go for it." And you find out the information, and you go forward. And then you decide, I think she went this way. Or take this side. There are things called side adventures, not part of the main event, but you know, they are off to the side. invariably, you can get in trouble with those things. A GM can have this wonderful campaign laid out before him, but all it takes is a couple of idiot gamers that say, "Oh, well, I'm not going to follow your grand campaign." Everything that you've set up, every stinking wonderful trap and neat little twist and turn, they'll never see it. All that work to either gets flushed down the toilet. And those are the times I feel sorry for the GMs. Now, who was it that told me? This is many, many years ago when it comes to role-playing. They had this one GM which I was talking to about, you know, these players, and the problem is he had these players which were so, you know, powerful. It was crazy. they were crazy powerful. So what he did, yeah, and of course, these players had knew every single monster in the book, as in they memorized the monster manual. So they knew what each and every capability of each monster was, and you know what took to defeat them and all that. You know, okay, do we need certain scrolls? Do we need certain spells? Do we need certain weapons? Do we need, and so forth. Now, this GM got really smart, and he, because, you know, he got tired. He got tired of these players, these all, you know, uber characters just kicking butt and just destroying his dungeons. Like, oh, well, wipe, dead, you know. Oh, we have an ancient dragon, dead, you know. It's like, these people are nuts. So, this GM created a monster. And I think it was the coolest idea for a monster, which was, it was a time-traveling spider. So what would happen is that the spider could travel back in time and then attack you. So you are here, and then all of a sudden, you know, it would go back in time like 30 seconds. It would, and you wouldn't know it, but all of a sudden you got attacked, you know, and you got, it's like, okay, wait a minute, what happened? You know, how did I get attacked? You know, I didn't see him. It's like, well, he traveled back in time and you never saw him. So that's one way he killed. Actually, I think he used it to kill off the whole freaking party because the guy's gotten too powerful, you know, which was crazy. That's when the players enjoy the characters because there's uber characters. They've got this wonderful loot, this wonderful weapons and armor and all that kind of thing. And it just gets tiring and boring. Because I think Annie Palmer had it right. Annie Palmer is a guy who played Starfleet Battles. He loved playing FedCom just because of the limitations. What he really liked to do is play the cadet version because of it was a simplified version of SFB. Really simplified. More simplified than tournaments. He played down in Columbia, Maryland. And one thing he just noted was that the challenge is really fighting within limits. You know, that's part of the challenge of SFB to begin with, is that you're fighting within limits. You are fighting, you only have so much energy to do this, and this. And it's not like, and that's why, you know, I think the second generation X-Ships really failed awfully because everything was doubled and blah, 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 you know. And really, it definitely, made the ships just unbalanced altogether. So that was crazy. So the topic I want to discuss when it comes to Prime Directive and role-playing games in general, I know there are some role-playing game websites, and sorry, I got sidetracked by other things. I meant to look it up tonight, and I didn't, which was some of the websites out there. I know there are. Now, the one thing that I've seen mentioned when it comes to role-playing games, and I've seen it done, it's kind of weird in my mind, but you can do it, which is adventures via forum threads. You know, that's how you run the game, which is, it's online, I guess. You know, so my daughter did something. She called, I forgot what she called it, but basically, to me, what it was is basically using Tumblr to create this interactive role-playing, almost like a role-playing game, And they just would interact using these characters. These characters would have these backgrounds, and you could bring in other characters, and you create these characters on Tumblr. You create these profiles, different profiles, a profile for each of your characters. And it was actually quite an interesting use of Tumblr, which was, if I recall correctly, what you would do is you do an initial post for that character, on that profile. Now, for that, within Tumblr, and then a person would, from another account, which was that character, another character would reply in the reply for Tumblr. And then, so you could go back and forth in this fashion. So, my daughter did that for many, many years. I'm not sure if she, I don't think she does it anymore. But she did it a lot while she was in high school. Which, that's why I look at it and say, you could be a really good writer. Well, she's not. To be honest, her English isn't that great to be a writer, but she has this great imagination. This awesome imagination when it comes to characters and background. And, she would think of these great characters. And I told her, save those characters. Save that background material. Save all that. Because there's going to be a day where you might want to write a book or write something else, and you have all these wonderful characters you've already created with these background this background material for these characters already written, and that is a hard, in some cases, really hard thing to do. Come on. Think about video games. Video games, they have characters these days. They're actually telling stories, which is quite interesting. But anyway, getting back to Prime Directive, the whole idea is, when the topic was Prime Directive Online, which is playing the game online. Now, obviously, there's multiple ways of doing it. And I had one podcast where I talked about them. I'm going to go through them again because it's been a while since I've talked about the whole idea. And obviously, if you want to go down rudimentary, you can use like Skype and or Discord. Probably, these days, you know what? I think Discord would probably be better because of it is not video based; it is text based. So we're getting back to core now. Obviously, there are some times where you need an interactive map to talk about things, to have combat. Number one, in my mind, is combat. Because in theory, in my mind, you don't really want to play a role-playing game with a grid in front of you. I've seen people do it, but in my mind, it's like, no. That's wrong. The only time that you should be looking at a map at all is if there's combat. The whole idea of that is then you have the different distances. You have the idea of a layout of the area where you're fighting in, but you don't actually... play like a top down role playing game. Interesting. Russ says that his philosophy on writing is that all of us stink at conversing in good grammar, so why write it that way? Oh geez, I still have. Russ, just to get on my daughter again for a moment. My daughter, when she was really young, wrote this one story called Alien Girl. And I hope that she takes the idea and rewrites it. Because I remember she wrote this and it's like, this is incoherent. It really needs some work. And I try to help her, you know, to fix the story some so it made a little more sense. You know, had a little more details and so forth because she missed a lot of that stuff. And I every once in a while I rib her about writing that story. You know, I don't you know, do it too much, but every once in a while I rib her about it. But I really do think she has talent for writing. She's right now working on a multimedia degree, mainly in the graphic arts. But got two daughters who are going to graduate from college, both with arts degrees, which is not actually a bad thing from what I heard. I heard that, you know, in these days, when it comes to the future, those are going to be the kind of jobs that cannot be replaced by automation. A lot of things are going to be able, you're going to be able to replace with automation, but anything that touches the heart requires an emotional response. Computers are never going to be, they might get okay with it, but they're not going to get good at it, you know. Because there's humans are a fickle creature, you know, which is interesting. Move forward. When it comes to, you know, Prime Directive, you know, because I think definitely it's something that you'd want to be interactive when it comes to discussion. Now, obviously, you could do something along Discord, which is both text-based and verbal. You can join a whole chat room and just talk back and forth. Now, and probably have some kind of website where you can share pictures, whether it is something as simple as Flickr, you know, post a map up on Flickr, you know, or something as simple as share, you know, using Skype to share your screen. You know, and do everything via Skype, though. I'd be concerned about Skype because of the security holes that they found in Skype. I think it's Microsoft that they're not going to prepare for a while. But I digress. So, I guess that's one thing that I really don't know these days, which is how do people actually play role-playing games? Are they more to the old-school purist perspective, i.e. that it's a verbal telling of how things look, you know, describing the room or the building or the outside of what it looks like, you know, or are they use more maps, you know, okay, route, like almost like Russ and Dave, remember the old game called Ultima? It's been a while since I played Ultima. Ultima was, that was a cool game. Where you go, gallivanting around, adventuring, you know, on this map. And then you have your role-playing group of individuals, which are, you're all controlled by you. You know, do they play more like that, where they have individual people that, you know, even that's, you know, I know that's 8-bit. Kind of thing. But, you know, do role-playing games go do that these days where they just have characters on the board? Now, I'm not thinking about going full-fledged where you're going, you know, the whole idea of live-action role-playing, basically. Not live-action role-playing, but the whole idea of something along the lines of, what's the big popular game on the, not the 360, Xbox One, I think there's something, whatever. But basically, you know, more of live action, real time kind of thing. But, you know, is that the way, you know, is that the way they're doing these days? I don't know. You know, because I haven't played role-playing games for a while. And actually, that's one thing I probably should do, which is actually talk to the D&D people next time that I go to the Gamers of Summer or Gamers of Winter. Because invariably, there's a group of them playing. You know, these days I see Gamers of Winter, Gamers of Summer, it's less of a convention and more of a gaming group. Is what it is. You know, Doug pays for it, and then we reimburse him. You know, we all buy tickets to play games. That's what it is. It's like a gaming group that bring your games and everybody will play. Interesting. So, you know, hopefully I can get my pandemic back for my daughter. I have to check with her in a couple weeks because I want to see if she has actually had a chance to play it. Because I just sent it to her this week. I sent it to her with a mouse that I had laying around that she needed for getting her schoolwork done, because currently the software she's using really doesn't do well when it comes to using a trackpad. It's easier if you can use a mouse. And I agree, there are certain software that where a mouse just goes well. So with that, I think I will actually move forward on to the next topic. The next topic being Starfleet Warlord expansion and beginners. The two separate topics. They're more topic 2 and 3. I think I'll start with Starfleet Warlord beginners. One thing that I'm moving toward when it comes to Starfleet Warlord, and I'm sharing my thoughts here, which I invariably do, about Starfleet Warlord and how I'm what I'm doing with it. And that is that I've been listening to this one podcast called Release Notes, which is basically software development, everything but the code, which they changed their not headline, but their beginning gist. That was what they used to say. Now I think they say basically the way they become independent, not wealthy, but you know, living independently without, you know, being tied to the man, you know, corporations, which I'm invariably tied to the corporations, and then I earn quite a bit of money doing that, which I enjoy, and I like to have money because money is good, because I can pay my bills. Because I can't pay my bills, I'm living out of my car, because at least my car is paid for. But anyhow, one thing that they were telling me about the whole, you know, they were actually the past month they've been talking about websites and how you should design your website and things like that. And I think overall, I've got that down. I really have to really listen to what they said and relook at my website. But there is one thing they were just talking about, which is called a landing page, which I'm sure most people are familiar with. At least the concept of a landing page. The idea of it is that you go to a certain page on a website, which is directed to you by advertising or by a social post like on Twitter, on Facebook, or whatever. And it takes you to this what's called a landing page. The idea is that you have no way of navigating away from the landing page, which is, and you just, you have certain minimalistic controls about what you can do. You can do this or you can do this, and that's it. There's a, there should be no way to get to the main website, you know, in theory, I mean, because we want to focus on what you are selling or at least the message that you're bringing. Now, in the case of the beginners, one thing I was thinking about was creating a beginner's page where, you know, talk about, you know, what Starfleet Warlord is, a brief thing, possibly grab some of the stuff from the homepage when it comes to describing some background on Starfleet Warlord, because it's a touchy thing. It's, the whole idea is to get it so that people are interested and they're willing to at least find out more information about it. Now, given that, one thing that might be required, and I have to figure out if I want to do that or not, which is I might require to change the way my registration occurs. Currently, my registration requires that you pay $1, PayPal or whatever you want, however you want to pay it, which is fine. You know, I like it just because it keeps down on spammers and creating all these fake accounts and so forth. And invariably, I still have to cancel, you know, delete accounts that where you have these automated systems where they create an account, which is a dummy account, and it's kind of obvious after it's created that it is. One of the things currently is that the call sign used and the first and the name are the same. No one does that. You know, and it's one of those ones I probably should do is automatically just delete that account after it fails. So I can trim that out. See, that's one of my things I'm arguing over I'm debating within myself about, which is changing that process, because I think I can currently. I don't have a big issue with people creating accounts and never using, never registering. Really. And the spammers, most part, you know, they're pretty dead. You know, at least the automated bots. Now, the current wave, I can probably look out for and I can stop them from occurring. Now, the tough part is I know why they're doing it, which is they're trying to get me to send them an email so then they can spam that email. They're looking for good email addresses that they can use for then sending, not sending from my account, but sending to people using my account name. And then possibly get my own account like that being blocked at some point. You know, considered spam, whatever comes for that from that account is considered spam. I've had problems with that in the past. But also, I think part of that was that my server got taken over. Not taken over, but got crap in the mail server. I don't know exactly what happened to create all that crap. I really don't. But before I switched off the mail server, which was, it's been many, many years ago for SFB Online, I decided that, you know, back then I decided, okay, wait a minute. For Starfleet Warlord, SFB Online, all these domains that I've created, I'm done. I don't know what I'm doing when it comes to securing my mail server. That's just not have to worry about it. Pushed off someone who does. In the case of initially, I did was Google. Now I have some accounts on Fast FM and some on Hover. Depends upon the domain. But so given that, you know, my email is secure. That's when it comes to stuff with the world, I just the question is, do I send that email? Because the whole idea of that email is that if I can get people to register, then I can send out an email, and the email then would direct them to ask them if they want to sign up for a beginner's game. And a beginner's game would be a free game that they can sign up for. And after they sign up for it, then I can slot them in, and we can start a game, and I'll explain you what a beginner's game is. If I call correctly, I think I got it. I got to double check to see what it is, because I think it's like a 5x5? I think it might be a 5x5 game, which allows for up to, I think it was 4 or 6. I think it might have been a maximum of 6 players. So a very small game, which is supposed to last like 10 turns. And I figure by the tenth turn, anybody who's interested might want to graduate to a standard game, in which case anyone can play, including beginners. And that's when it actually goes from being a free beginner's game to a paid standard game. So, I want to try to automate that and make that a little more of a process that people can go through. Now, the tough part is going to be the landings page. How do we get people to go to the landings page? I got some ideas. Obviously, posting links to them from like Fran's Games. Saying, oh, we got have a beginner's landing page. You want to find out more about Starfleet Warlord? Go to this page. Add it to the Facebook group, and more importantly, the Starfleet Warlord page that I have, and add that and say, click on this link and you can find out even more. We can sign up for beginner's game and register an account. And the great thing about the only thing I'd have to mention about registering an account is that you basically have signed up for a mailing list also, I want to be able to take those emails and then add them to my mailing list for Starfleet Warlord, and then they can send out emails announcing, okay, my next game is going to be this. Who's welcome, I might actually have to start working on a better description of what these games are targeted for, instead of using the standard template as I have it now. But doing that, I think that would probably be a really good idea, especially if we're going to have a combination of beginners and non-beginners. Obviously, I still need to work on automating, because I really would like to have it so that people can play one-on-one. Or not one-on-one, but play on a standalone game. The whole that which I think would be really great. If I can get a standalone game going, then what I can do is that for those standalone games, as I mentioned before, I can have it as a contest, or at the very least, it can keep people interested in Starfleet Warlord itself. Have it a cheap, a standalone game, make it cheap. Make it like $1, since it's going to be completely automated. The standalone games that I would have available to people, it would be single player. And it would cost, and have to be completely automated. You could not actually ask me to type in orders. No. That's why I'm going to make it cheap. It's going to be completely automated. If it's completely automated, I'm going to make it so it's like $1 or $2 a turn. In that case, for single player. For full games, it's going to cost the normal $4 a turn. So that one great thing about the standards, the automated game, it would be $1 a turn, and then depending on how quickly you want to turn around. If you want to do a turnaround every single day, you can pay $1 a day. Or if it gets like that, then maybe I would need to have, for those kind of games, with an automated system, might have to say, okay, well, in that case, it's not gonna be $1 a turn. It's gonna be, I don't know, have it on a per game basis, like $10 a game, and you can play as long as you want that single game, which would be pretty cheap for people. And keep them interested, of course. Actually, you can see $10 for a full game, which would limit it to 30 turns or maybe 20 turns. You know, I have to limit the turns if I go for a flat rate, because otherwise I'm eating. And I also have to make sure it's one of those things that would be definitely a challenge, you know, when it comes to balancing cost versus benefit. You know, obviously the benefit is that if it's fully automated, then I don't have to interact with it. But also it might eat into my profits, so I won't be able to run the website because of everyone's playing the individual game, which is costing squat, you know, and the more costly games, you know, the diehards and the standards, to get nobody to play, and I would go out of business. You know, so that's why I have to think about that. But I'm a long way from automating the game, the whole game process. Now, so that's my whole idea when it comes to beginners, and I got a whole process. This whole process idea lined up. Not lined up, but I have it thought. I've thought out, and it seems like a good process overall. I might have to rewrite the process down so I can look at it, and then I have to visit it. And as I said, that means for beginners, the tough part is going to be how to get the word out. And the question actually comes to being that I do have the domain called StarfleetWarlord.com. And with StarfleetWarlord.com, do I switch? Not everything, maybe everything from the play by email domain over to Starfleet Warlord. Because StarfleetWarlord.com might be a better domain to use for this kind of stuff. You know? I have to wait and see, because require quite a bit of work to do. Actually, I'd have to check, because the Warlord domain is currently, all the mail is coming to fast.fm their mail servers. I'm wondering if I can change the domain on those accounts or not. Probably not. It probably would, because I'm currently I'm grandfathered in to the current rate. And the time, if they ever say, oh, no, you're not grandfathered in anymore, you have to pay the new rate, I will probably be leaving Fast.fm, because I looked at the cost and it's like, this is freaking nuts. So, anyhow, let's move forward from the beginners, because beginners, I think, is really, really exciting. I'm going to have to do more work. But with beginners, since it's a small game, a short game, you got beginners, they won't be doing a lot of complicated, it won't be a long game. I plan on having, so it's 10 turns and it's done. So it might be a maximum of like 2 pages of orders, if they ever ask me to enter them in. I'm hoping to have it so that people can just type it into the computer and it'll be done. Done. Which I think would be the most wonderful thing. But let's move on to Starfleet Warlord expansion. The whole idea, I've been bugged by one of the players for quite a few years now to expand the number of ships available in Starfleet Warlord, mainly in Andromeda. He wants me to add quite a bit of the module C3A ships. And this is always the difficult part. Obviously, here's the gotcha. In the good part about adding more ships is because you retain interest. The people say, oh, it's a new ship. We got the new capability. Let's see what we can do with it, and so forth. The tough part about adding new ships is always the other side of, you know, the whole side of the equation, you know, because it's a double-edged sword, you know, and that is that it might, the more ships you have available, the greater possibility there is to abuse because of one of the rules in Starfleet Warlord. In Starfleet Warlord, you cannot buy the same ship without penalty. If you buy one, like, let's say, Federation Dreadnought on turn 5. If you buy another Federation Dreadnought on turn 5, normally you have, like, a 5, I think it's, actually, I think 10% penalty, which you have to pay. So that ship costs 10% more. And then if you want to buy 3 ships, then you have to pay even the higher cost because of, you have that penalty because you're buying the same ship again and again and again and again. And actually, there is certain events that can happen where if that happens, you can actually buy, you know, the same ship without penalty. Lord knows, I've seen some players where when they get that event, they then buy like 10 or 15 all of the same ship. It's a huge number of ships of the same ship, which is, to me, really weird. So that's always a gotcha. Now, the question is, okay, he wants Andromedans. I can see adding a few Andromedan ships. Not all of them, but some of them. He said, let me bring that up real fast to see if I can. He asked me about adding them to the threat file. And then, there it is. Okay, will you ever add some of the ships from the Andromeda threat file? If not, please re-enable the Ravager and the Instigator motherships. I'm not sure why those were removed. Probably because, if I recall correctly, those ships, the Ravager and the Instigator, both are like motherships, which are just huge fighting ships. They're not really motherships. Motherships for Andromedans normally have a very small amount of weapons. Most of the weapons are in the actual satellite ships themselves. Okay, I'm going to do one quick thing so I can bring up the Give me that. I'm just going to add just for here for Andromedan. Thank you. And just give me let's first try the Instigator Heavy Cruiser. Add that one. Okay. And then I want to add a Ravager, which is RAV. And that one's going to be, it's called a Rave. And let's take a look at the SSDs. Okay, the Instigator. Let me look at it. Okay, we have one, the Instigator, which has one TRH and 4 TRLs, 4, 8 phaser twos, which is around the same as, I'm thinking it's relatively the same as a Python. I'm looking at this, 2 Diz Devs. Yeah, it reminds me of Python. Yeah, except for it has a few more phaser twos. I have to look at that. That's the Instigator. Now the Ravager, which is interesting. Two divs devs, one repair. I got one hanger. Got one TRH, two TRL lights. I'd like to know what he thought. To me, the big question when it comes to the weaponry is how is this represented? Because I'm looking at 6'4", which means that it's around the size class of a Mamba. So it's like having two TRHs. If I recall correctly, the Mamba has like three TRLs. Let me just for a moment. Whoops. Mamba. That versus the Ravager. So in theory, I could have sworn this does not look right. I've got to look at the. I got to double check this because I don't think this was correct. No, because of it, I could have sworn a stack of Bibles. See if I can load up the old def and take a look. See here, because I could have sworn that the Andromedan Mamba. Let's look at this for a moment. I'm pretty sure someone would have screamed at me if I got the Mamba conversion wrong. No, it's correct. I thought it had like one on the right side, one on the right, left side, and one at the top. Huh. I'm not sure why. Other than, okay, there is, let me look at the Ravager. I'm looking at the, oops, sorry. Let's look at the Ravager. The Ravager has one hanger. So basically, the Ravager is something akin to a Python. That's what it's akin to. That's what it reminds me of. 12 hull. Well, actually, 12 hull. That's, the Ravager is akin to the Conquistador, is what it is, because of it takes more. Okay, so it has the same, the way I see it, has the same offensive potential as a. Yeah, to me, it has the same offensive potential as a. Mamba, but it can actually take more damage. That's what it looks like to me. Let me just look at the batteries. It's got six batteries, and Mamba also has six batteries. I gotta figure out what I did wrong there. Right. So, yeah, that's what seems like it indicates. Yeah. Basically use the defensive ability, well, the hit points. So the hit points of a Conquistador, the Ravager would have the hit points of a Conquistador, the same defensive capabilities. It actually has a hanger and actually has two Dizdevs. So it's approximately the same. I have to look at that. I got to see how the Python is actually handled in Starfleet Warlord. But the question is, that's one thing I have to look at. Yeah, the Mamba is the Python is a satellite ship. The Mamba is also a satellite ship that has no Dizdev. But the Python had one. That's why the Ravager actually is, it's based on the Conquistador. Everything flat out is the Conquistador because it has the two Dizdev, which I think basically everything about it is a Conquistador. I have to check to see. I think it might be a little more powerful than the Conquistador. I think that's what it is. Right. Let me just do that one more thing, which is let me add the Conquistador so I can do a quick comparison here. There it is. Conquistador. Now, let's take a look see at the Conquistador. And the Conquistador has... Okay, so basically... The only thing I would possibly give is that the Ravager has a minor... Okay. Let me just look at this one more. Okay, it's two phases, two, right? Right. So the Ravager has, to me, has a slight decreased offensive potential because it is two TRLs and one TRH versus Conquistador, which has two TRHs, which is a big difference. Not a big difference, but there's a minor difference in that the TRHs can have, when it comes to longer ranges, it has a higher potential than versus two TRLs. Because the problem is with the two TRLs is that the rounding amount of damage goes down, and of course, the amount of energy goes up. So you might want to also knock off a little bit of speed on the Ravager. Yeah, what I might do if I would instigate it, I would say, okay, well, it is minorly less powerful, minorly slower because of the amount of to run it requires more energy. Because of two TRLs requires more energy than one TRH. Right. And same for the Ravager. Ravager can do exactly the same thing. And just double check. Yep. And the Conquistador has... Yep. Conquistador has two Dizzy Devs. So... Now... So... To me, the only reason to have both the Ravager and the Conquistador is if you want to build more Conquistadors, basically. See, this is where the whole idea of what is the benefit of adding certain ships. As I told, actually, the guy's name is Shelley. As I told Shelley a while back, I said, Shelley, look. Here's the thing. I told him flat out that I might add some of them, but I would not add all of them because of basically it's you are just asking the Andromedans to roll over everybody. As an Andromeda player, I like the idea. But as the GM, I need it to be fair. I don't want everyone playing Andromedans, you know, because now we can buy all the ships we want, you know, without a penalty. And therefore, you know, which means more Andromedans would be bought. Now, then we have, of course, all the variants and so forth when it comes to the Federation, the Gorns, and all them. Because I could add those, but the question would be, how much benefit is there to the variety, would it be adding to the variety of the game? And that's the key. Is you're measuring the detriment of to the game caused by the possibility of flooding the game with certain ships, or in the case of the Andromedans, if you add every single threat file ship, I'm willing to bet you that we start seeing just all Andromedan. To a certain degree, there are certain downsides to being Andromedans when it comes to terrain and Starfleet Warlord. So, I can see that happening. So, I think that overall, it's a dance. It always is. It's a balancing dance. How much? It's like Starfleet battles. It's a balance of offensive versus defensive. In the case of Starfleet Warlord, it's a balancing of variety versus taking advantage of that variety just to build as many of the one kind of ship, you know, at a cheap cost. You know, saving that extra 10%. So I think with that, we will wrap up for this evening. So we had a nice little chat about Prime Directive and a few ways to play it online. And, you know, one thing which definitely came obvious is that I'm not quite sure how people play role-playing games today, because it's been 30 years since I've actually, you know, almost 30 years since I've played a role-playing game. I mean, you know, I haven't even played UGG. I think it's UGG. Which I always loved watching the game. I think it was one of those role-playing games where I enjoyed it more by just watching. So, and of course, then we had a nice discussion about Starfleet Warlord and getting that, you know, getting beginners in, have them interested in about playing and learning about Starfleet Warlord and possibly become part of the whole Warlord family, per se, you know, playing with people. Because the whole thing about Warlord, it's not about playing individually and just trying to win individually. The only way to win individually is to actually play with other players. You have to do all the diplomacy stuff. That's the only way it's going to work. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.